Good morning. Welcome to California Coastal Commission. And we'll begin by asking Ms. Miller to call the roll, please.
Commissioner Bochco.
Here.
Commissioner Brennan.
Present.
Commissioner McClure.
Here.
Commissioner Mitchell.
Here.
Commissioner Novell.
Here.
Commissioner Stone.
Here.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Here.
Chair Schellenberger.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Great. Thank you very much. And I wanted to thank Commissioner Stone for inviting us to his lovely chambers and Santa Cruz and the home stomping ground of our executive director. Would you like to?
Yeah, I'd just like to say welcome, everybody. Hopefully, this will be a comfortable, looks like a fairly quick couple of days. And if you need anything, let me know. We'll make sure that everybody's as comfortable as can be. It looks like some good weather. Had a little bit of rain yesterday, not nearly enough as much as we were going to need. But enjoy your time.
Thank you. Now we'll go to the public comment period. Gail Williamson, Don Weber, and then Patricia Matichek. And if you all could come forward and be ready to take the mic, I'd appreciate it.
Hello, Commissioners. My name is Gail Williamson, and I am speaking on behalf of the Venice Action Alliance and as a former member of the Free Venice Beachhead. The City of L.A. has restricted coastal access, even though it hasn't applied for a coastal development. We have several signs with us today of signs that have been posted. I urge the commissioners to instruct staff not to make concessions to the City of L.A. that restrict public access with curfews that have had no commission review or that allow preferential parking. Thank you. When the overnight parking district was denied, the city accomplished this very effectively using another ordinance. It's no longer really interested in a Venice OPD. It is simply using the lawsuit as leverage to get curfews. That's what it's after. The OPD is a bargaining chip, and the lawsuit provides the vehicle. For 36 years, the Coastal Act and this commission have protected unique coastal communities like Venice. Public access is the cornerstone of the Coastal Act, and 16 million visitors per year make Venice by far the most public beach in California. If you succumb to the blatant machinations, you invite further lawsuits and erosion of our hard-won coastal protections. The people of California deserve better. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Don Weber?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Commissioners, I'm Don Weber. I welcome you on behalf of the people of Santa Cruz. I haven't spoken to all of them, but I've spoken to a good number of them, and many people here understand the power of the Coastal Act, and we recognize the value of the California coast, not only as a mighty economic engine, but as an asset of immense aesthetic and even spiritual value. And we also appreciate the unique and important role that this commission plays in preserving the coast by enforcing that act. Let's face it, parochial interests at times trump the general good, and at times local agencies of government are not up to the task of protecting the ocean, the coast. And we rely on you to do that, and we're grateful when you do. So I welcome you. I hope you have a productive and rewarding meeting, and I hope you enjoy your time in Santa Cruz. Thank you so much. It's good to see you all.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here. Patricia Matichek?
Good morning, Chair Schellenberger and members of the Commission. I would like to echo Don's welcome to Santa Cruz County. It's good to see you all back here again. I do have some copies of some of the comments I'd like to make on behalf of the Venice Action Alliance, and would give you a copy of them as well as a copy of a recently erected sign in Venice in contradiction to a prior Commission action. If I could give these to Vanessa and ask her to pass them out to you. Um, I, of course, am not a resident of Venice, but I am speaking on behalf of the Venice Action Alliance. And we're concerned about the attempts in Venice to restrict public coastal access throughout the coast of California. At last month's hearing, Venice Action spoke about the ongoing lawsuit against this commission by the City of Los Angeles and a group calling itself the Venice Stakeholders Association. They also noted the city had restricted coastal access by closing Venice Beach at night, even though it never applied for a coastal development permit. Commission staff notified the city in January of 2009 and again in August of 2010 that its curfew was out of compliance with the Coastal Act. The city's response was a belligerent letter accusing the commission of abuse, overstepping its jurisdiction, and retaliating for the OPD lawsuit. Now the city has taken its defiance to a new level. 3 weeks ago, it posted these signs, not only banning night access to the beach, but expanding the curfew to include Oceanfront Walk, also known around the world as the Venice Boardwalk. To many residents, it's the only access to their homes, still with no CDP, not even an application. We have distributed an editorial from last Sunday's Los Angeles Times, which condemns the curfew as overkill, and it goes on to say, quote, "It's troubling enough that the beaches are off limits at night, but the closing off of a sidewalk entirely goes too far," end of quote. The city's response, the police will be checking papers. The timing of the signs should not be taken as accidental. 1 week from today, the city's OPD lawsuit goes to a status hearing. A global settlement is being proposed which lumps together separate issues, including the OPD parking district for Venice, nighttime closure of beaches all the way from Santa Monica border to El Segundo, the curfew on Oceanfront Walk, a preferential parking district for Playa del Rey to the south, and a separate OPD for the Oxford Triangle section of Venice. The commission twice rejected the city's application for OPDs in Venice because you felt the city was trying to solve a social problem by unduly restricting access to Venice Beach. Now you're going to be asked to solve a whole lot, grab bag of problems.
Thank
we
you
ask
very much.
You to protect public access. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Ray and Shane Ray has ceded his time, so you'll have 6 minutes.
Right back here. And I have a PowerPoint here.
Just the F.
Forward. Oh, okay.
Go forward one slide, backward. Squeeze the
nuts. Right there. Okay. Okay, Madam Chair, Honorable Commissioners, I'm Steve Ray. I'm Executive Director of the Banning Ranch Conservancy. It's good to see you all again. First of all, I have a PowerPoint presentation, and I can tell you right now, I see that's the old one that was loaded in. It's not the new one. So I may have to hop and skip around here a little. During last summer and last fall, you had before you the Sunset Ridge Park Project from the city of Newport Beach. And they wisely withdrew the project just seconds before you literally were about to deny the application. And they have now submitted a new application to you that your staff is now looking at and working on. It's much, much better than the previous application. However, there are some serious issues that still have to be dealt with. Your staff had identified a large area of Escha on the Sunset Ridge Park project consisting of encelia and other native plants in this coastal sage scrub habitat community that houses and would serve as nesting, possibly even for the California netcatcher. And so your staff declared that unless the city could verify that they had some sort of vesting rights or would apply for a CDP, for such purposes of destroying that Esha that they could not do it. And I want to show you here, if I can find the right pictures here. These are pictures that were taken Sunday, this past Sunday, just a few days ago, of the Esha that's growing out there on Sunset Ridge. This is in Celia, and there's deer weed in here also, very fine constituents of the coastal sage scrub habitat community, perfect nesting and foraging habitat for the California netcatcher. This is an example of it here. You can see the homes way off in the distance in the upper left of the picture there. Here is another picture of it from a slightly different angle, showing again the tremendous growth. This was Sunday. Monday, this is what happened. The city came out with their tractors and mowed it all down, destroying it. This is what they have been doing on and on, over and over. We have notified the commission many times of this violation of the Coastal Act. To date, there has been no action taken or anything like that. We would ask the commission to step in immediately to stop this destruction of this Esha habitat that your staff has declared would be Esha, and issue a cease and desist order immediately to have this stopped. Matter of fact, one of our people went out and saw the Sunset Ridge project manager on site and approached him and asked what's going on with the mowing. And he said, quote, "Well, we've got to mow early to control the net catchers." To control the nesting. That's what he said. And she said, "The nesting for what?" And he said, "The net catchers." And she said, "So you're telling me you're out here mowing to destroy the nesting habitat for the net catchers?" And after a pause, then he said, "Oh, no, it's maintenance. It's maintenance. That's what it is. It's maintenance." And she said, "What kind of maintenance?" He said, "Fire maintenance." And she said, "Well, the fire code says 100 feet from any structures. They're mowing up to 587 feet from structures." And she pointed that out to him, and he said, "Well, we don't follow that law. We do it our way." And this is what they're doing. They're out there destroying habitat. We would ask the commission to please take action immediately on this to keep this from happening. There's a second issue, and let me find the correct slide here to go to. This one here. The commission had found the city and the owners of Banning Ranch to be in violation of the Coastal Act by having cleared some polygons, and you may recall that from last spring. They were to do some mitigation, and they have chosen this area that's lined out in white here to do mitigation on Banning Ranch property. There are two issues with that. First of all, that is within 100 feet. Some of that territory is within 100 feet of homes and would be subject to clearing for fire modification, which makes it undesirable for mitigation. The second thing is, as you can see, they've also mowed that area. What they did is they mowed native habitat in that area also. Again, Esha habitat. And now they're going to set it up and say, "Okay, well, we destroyed this Esha habitat, so now we're going to recreate it here." I don't think that is a very, very wise mitigation to be done to destroy Esha so they can just replant it. They're trying to pull a fast one on the community and on this commission, and I hope you won't allow that. On another issue, if I can find it, this is from the Banning Ranch DEIR, which is now closed, and it's now being considered by the Planning Commission, the whole Banning Ranch project. And it says in that small print there that this is from the DEIR, and it says that there are 489 oil wells on the property. And we have documentation here from the CDP that was issued an exemption in 1973 to the owners of that property for the oil drilling operations. And it says in here that they will be allowed to operate. There were 312 wells existing. They were going to drill another 28. That's a total of 340 wells that's allowed under that permit. The DEIR says that there are 489. They are obviously in violation, again, of the Coastal Act and of their permit. So we ask you to please look into that, and we'll be happy to provide you with all this information. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, can I make a...
Commissioner Blank, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for staff. Director Lester, I think last session when we talked about the, or 2 months ago, when we talked about the park, we actually learned what the real fire code requirement was in the state of California, and that there really should be extra consideration when any jurisdiction that wants to quote fire code as a reason for mowing ESHA. Can we just look into this, or has staff already addressed this?
Yes, Commissioner Blank, we are currently investigating this. We're aware of the mowing. It's that's a piece of the puzzle, but it's not the complete puzzle. So there are other issues that we'll need to consider, including the decision about whether it is ESHA or not, which is not straightforward.
Got it. But staff is on top of this. And,
oh, yeah.
Great.
Oh. Yeah, Sherilyn's got it in hand.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Grant Weisman.
Good morning, Commissioners, Madam Chair. I am Grant Weisman, a member of ORCA, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Venice Action Alliance. And while I don't live in Venice, I am concerned about the attempts to restrict public coastal access throughout the coast of California. The Commission twice rejected the city's application for overnight parking districts in Venice because you felt the city was trying to solve a social problem by unduly restricting access to Venice Beach. But now you're going to be asked to solve a whole grab bag of social problems by, I'm sorry, a whole grab bag of social problems by restricting access to most of the Los Angeles beachfront in one fell swoop with an extremely truncated public process. Yes, there will be a single public hearing to vote on the whole nine yards, but the deal is being engineered behind closed doors. We believe that this violates the spirit of the Coastal Act. The litigants are not only trying to privatize the public beach, they're trying to privatize the public process. The city attorney has consistently displayed an utter disregard for the Coastal Act and contempt for the coastal, for the commission and due process. At one point, he tried to get state legislation to eliminate your jurisdiction. He called it, quote, litigation by other means, unquote. When environmental groups realized its intent, AB 2228 was hastily withdrawn. So what was an issue about an overnight parking district and beach curfew is now also about protection of the public process. And these issues deserve full and open public consideration like any other coastal development application. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And finally, Billy, you have something you'd like to share with us.
Yes. Commissioners, the way the microphones are working today is very important that you understand. These small microphones have a good pickup range of about that far. So if you keep them about that far and point it at you, they will work great. Watch your computers that you don't put your computer up and then try and talk, and we won't hear you. So there's no off other than a temporary off. So your microphones are live. So just think that they're picking up everything you say, even when you're whispering, because they're very sensitive. Okay? Thank you.
So we can use these as well?
Yes. Those are our mics. We've plugged into the house system. It's the only way that we can make this all work together. And so they work the same as always. You can turn them on and off. Thank you.
So, beware. Be warned, beware. The live mics are live. All right, staff will go on to the South Coast District.
But first up, for the audience, if you wish to speak on an item on today's agenda, please fill out a speaker slip and give it to commission staff. Those are located on the table just outside the meeting room. When you're in the meeting room, please turn off any cell phones or wireless devices as those interfere with our webcast. And next, I'll go over the changes to today's agenda.
Thank you.
And starting on pages 3 and 4, there are no changes. So that brings us to page 5. Agenda item 12A, the safari permit application is postponed. 12B, the Fisher application postponed. Moving on to page 6, item 16A, the City of Solano Beach permit amendment is postponed. That's a new item. That's not on your memo. Item 16B, which is located on your agenda addendum, and that is the Sorrento Valley Holdings appeal. That is postponed.
Excuse me.
Jack, just to, so both 16A and B are postponed?
Correct.
Okay.
No, I think you mean
17. I thought it was just 16.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought it was just 16B.
I think you mean 17 if you're actually talking about Solano Beach.
That's, you are right. That is 17A.
Okay. So 16A is still on the calendar. 17.
Correct.
A is postponed. Got it.
So, going on to page 7, 21B, the Hickerson application, we're recommending be moved to consent. Item 22A, the Lakota Properties Amendment, moved to consent. Moving on to page 8, item 25A, the Sadat LLC application, moved to consent. That concludes our changes to today's agenda. So that brings us to item 5, and these are the consent calendar permits for the Los Angeles County portion of the South Coast District, and staff is not aware of any opposition to the items on the consent calendar. Recommend the commission vote and approve the consent calendar.
Are there any ex partes to declare? Seeing none?
Move consent.
Second.
Consent's been moved by Commissioner Kinsey, seconded by Commissioner Stone. Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the consent calendar is approved.
And moving on to item 6, it's the administrative calendar for the South Coast District, Orange County. There's two items. They're routine dock replacement projects, and staff recommends the commission concur with the executive director and approve the administrative calendar.
Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
And item 7 is the consent calendar for the South Coast District, Orange County. Three items with all the conditions acceptable to the applicant. We are not aware of any public interest in these items. Therefore, staff recommends the commission approve the consent calendar.
Are there any ex partes on consent? Seeing none? Moved by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes? Seeing none, its consent calendar is approved.
And item 8 is the consent calendar for the San Diego District. Again, the conditions are acceptable to the applicant, and staff recommends the commission approve the consent calendar.
Are there any ex partes? Seeing none?
Move the consent calendar.
Consent is moved by Commissioner Stone and seconded by Commissioner Zimmer. Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, consent calendar is approved.
And item 9 is the Deputy Director's Report for the South Coast District. That's your pink copy. It's item Wednesday 9 and also Wednesday item 18. This report includes both Orange County and LA County items. It's the list of non-material amendments, extensions, and waivers for the South Coast District. These are items that are routinely approved by the Commission. We're not aware of any public interest or opposition to these items, and staff recommends that the Commission concur with the Executive Director and approve the South Coast District Deputy Director's Report.
Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
And that moves us to item 11A. This is the City of Laguna Beach LCP Amendment 3-11, a time extension request to extend the 60-day time limit for commission action on this LCP amendment, which is revisions to the implementation plan to address public notification requirements. We are recommending the commission approve a one-year time extension to the 60-day time limit, and the motion to approve is at the bottom of the one-page staff report.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes? Seeing none.
I move that the Commission extend the time limit to act on the City of Laguna Beach Local Coastal Program Implementation Plan, Amendment Number LGB-MAJ 3-11, for a period of 1 year.
Moved by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Mitchell. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we unanimously approve the time extension.
And that moves us to the San Diego District. This is the item 13, the Deputy Director's Report for the San Diego District. There is only one waiver to report today. There's no known interest in this item, and staff recommends the commission concur with the Executive Director and approve the Deputy Director's Report for the San Diego District.
Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
And then the next item is item 15A. This is the City of Encinitas LCP Amendment 2-11. It's for the Cardiff by the Sea Specific Plan. It's a time extension request to extend the 60-day time limit for commission action. This would amend the LCP implementation plan and proposes the Cardiff by the Sea Specific Plan to be part of the LCP implementation plan and address the planning and community character goals for the Cardiff Business District. This item was withdrawn and resubmitted, and we're currently working with the city. Expect to hopefully get this back to you next month. But staff, we do need a one-year time extension of the 60-day time limit.
Any ex partes? Seeing none, moved by Commissioner Stone.
I'll move that, that we accept the time limit.
And seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we unanimously approve.
And item 11A is the City of Laguna Beach LCP Amendment 3-11, another time extension request. Oh, I'm sorry.
15B.
This is just my script.
We're rolling, you know.
Wrong script. This is the Solana Beach LCP Amendment Land Use Plan.
15B.
B. B.
Bad script. Sorry. For the City of Solana Beach Land Use Plan. And this is the first land use plan for the City of Solana Beach. It was withdrawn after a staff report came to the Commission in October, and it has been resubmitted. We've committed to the City to agendize the land use plan for the March hearing next month in Chula Vista, but we do need a one-year time extension of the 90-day time limit for this action.
Thank you. Any ex partes? Seeing none.
I move that the Commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on the City of Solana Beach LUP.
Microphone on, please.
The other one didn't say.
Yeah. I move that the Commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on the City of Solana Beach LUP for a period not to exceed 1 year.
It's been moved by Commissioner Zimmer, seconded by Commissioner Stone. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we approve the time extension.
And the next item is 16A. I do have a PowerPoint on this item, please. This is item number A6, OCN 1180. The applicant is Altman. And this is an appeal by Gregory and Don Swajan of a decision by the City of Oceanside for construction of a 460-square-foot third-story addition to an existing two-story over basement 4,700 square-foot oceanfront home on South Pacific Street in Oceanside. And slide one shows the location of the property. Slide two, please. Maybe I can get this. This is the existing residence. It appears as two-story on the street side of Pacific Street. And the next slide, please. This is taken from the beach, and it appears as two-story over a basement on the beach side. Slide four, please, shows that these are the plans, and the proposal is to move the existing second level at the street seaward, and the addition will then extend west to cover the three levels existing below at the beach elevation. So the addition or the project accomplishes two things. It would provide some vertical relief through the step back of the second story on the street side, but it will also add a third level above the basement when viewed from the beach. Next slide, please. This slide shows the pattern of development along South Pacific. There is a string line established in the LCP, and this project is within that string line. The appellant contends that the proposed addition will result in four-story home, three levels over basement on the seaward side of the home, and only two levels over basement are permitted through zoning. And the additional level was approved by the city through the issuance of a variance, which the appellant contends was not warranted, and the city's findings were not consistent with the city's LCP. The project also involves lengthening the two existing west-facing decks 3.5 feet beyond the string line setback established in the LCP. The LCP allows for open decks, patios, and balconies to be extended beyond the string line setback, provided they do not substantially impair the views from adjoining properties. and the appellant is the neighbor to the south and disagrees with the city's determination of the string line setback and the finding that the deck expansion will not obstruct views from the neighbors to the north and south. And finally, the appellant contends the parking to serve the site is insufficient, with only a one-car garage where two cars are required through zoning. The staff is recommending the commission find no substantial issue is raised by the subject appeal. The proposed addition will clearly result in three levels over an exposed basement, which is inconsistent with the LCP. The city approved this additional level through a variance. And to grant the variance, the city must find special circumstances applicable to the property that deprives the owner of rights enjoyed by other property in the vicinity or zone classification. Because the lot size and the shape, location, and topography is similar to the surrounding lots for the entire South Oceanside neighborhood, your staff questioned how the finding can be made in this particular case. But the city's research of other variance approvals and structures that appear at four levels was inconclusive as to how these structures may have been approved and if they were possibly two levels over a two-level basement, which is, it may be permissible under certain conditions. So the city's basis for approval of the variance, we believe, was also not well supported. However, in decisions on appeals to determine whether or not a substantial issue exists, in addition to the question of whether the proposed development is consistent with the LCP, the Commission does have the discretion to consider factors, including the scope of the development, the significance of the coastal resources affected by the decision, the precedential value of the local government's decisions for future interpretations of the LCP, and whether the appeal raises only local issues or those of regional or statewide significance. The staff has reviewed development in the surrounding area, along with information submitted by the applicant after review of the area and determining that of 45 properties, 14 appear to have four stories when viewed from the beach. It's really not possible to document how and if those were all properly permitted. The standard for the height limit and how it's measured have been changing in this area. And in this case, the proposed development is within the 35-foot height limit allowed by the LCP. So the question of consistency is related only to the number of stories, not the actual height of the structure. The standard established in several areas of the city's land use plan and implementation plan say that new development must be compatible in height, scale, color, and form with the surrounding neighborhood. And a finding for variance approval indicates that the granting of the variance will not be materially detrimental or injurious to the surrounding property, nor to the general development pattern of the neighborhood. The staff has looked at the pattern of development and specifically the appearance from the public areas, including Pacific Street and the beach. Next slide, please. The additional level in this case will not result in any impact to public views of the shoreline. Those views are only down the side yard setbacks and are blocked by the structure in this area. We believe the setback will improve the appearance of the structure from the street. And regarding the fourth level, staff review of the neighborhood has confirmed that the many of the homes in South Oceanside appear at four levels when viewed from the beach. They are large and boxy. The description of this area in the LCP actually indicates that the homes in this area are large and boxy. Again, the coastal issues related to development would be raised by encroachment further seaward beyond the string line that may impact public use of the beach. So staff has determined that there are no adverse impacts to coastal resources, public views, or public access associated with the proposed development. And in determining the effect on precedent, due to the size of the addition and the limitations to overall height of the structure in the LCP, we acknowledge that for a number of reasons, the standards that have historically been applied by the city to structure in this area have allowed a wide variation in height and number of stories, but the potential for variation is limited by that height standard and the string line, and it will not allow for structures that may have adverse effects on coastal resources. So we think that the adverse precedent of this decision is not a significant concern if the commission concurs with the staff and finds no substantial issue. Regarding parking, the parking is consistent with the LCP. There is no increase in the number of bedrooms, so there is no increase in the parking requirement for this minor addition. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on this? Commissioner Blank.
Yes, Madam Chair. Last night I had a phone call with Susan McCabe when I told her I've been unable to look at her materials, and I would do so. She emailed me the package which has been provided to all the commissioners, and I reviewed that package this morning.
Thank you. Commissioner Kinsey.
Yes, on February 2nd, I had a phone conversation with Susan McCabe. She also provided a presentation by email that was available during the conversation. We reviewed that, and that's my comments.
Commissioner Mitchell.
On February 1st at 11:30 in Los Angeles, I had a meeting, in-person meeting with Susan McCabe, and we reviewed the electronic presentation which has been provided to staff.
Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On February 1st at 4 o'clock, we had a telephone conversation with Susan McCabe, and as already been pointed out, reviewed the...
thank you. I thought those were on all the time.
I know. Not the
favorite. Oh, okay. I'll pay more attention. Sorry. We reviewed the packet that was submitted to staff. Basically, they were agreeing with staff's recommendation to find no substantial issue.
Commissioner Stone.
I have an ex parte on file from Susan McCabe. We went through the same materials.
Commissioner McClure.
Yes, I also had a phone conversation with Susan McCabe, and we reviewed the same materials that are in the green packet today, and my letter was mailed. And due to technical difficulties, I'm not sure if my meeting was the 1st or the 31st because I can't get back to my email this morning.
Okay. Commissioner Bochco.
Mine's on file.
Thank you. Commissioner O'Connell. No. All right. I have, is the appellant in the room? I don't have a speaker slip for the appellant. Seeing none, then, Susan McCabe, you'll have 3 minutes, and you're representing the Altman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's see how this works. Oh, I think he's loading the PowerPoint up. Okay, good. Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioners. I'm Susan McCabe, representing Dina Altman, who's here today in the audience on this appeal. We are in agreement with the staff recommendation of no substantial issue, and I just want to very quickly go through the 3 points that were raised by the appellant. The first is, as the staff said, is a very small addition to the an expansion of the rooftop, the bedroom on the first floor. Oops. I don't see a pointer here. If you see the little gun slit window, that is the bedroom, and that's going to be extended seaward and actually pulled back from the street. This is the existing home. The proposed home is located next door. The appellants are the neighbors on the far right-hand side of the photos. This is the existing street view. As you can see from the proposed, bedroom will be moved back. There'll be more articulation. There'll be actually an entryway on the first side of the street, which, as your staff has found, will help reduce the canyonization of that street. Of the 3 points that were raised by the appellant, the first is the consistency with the visual resource policies. The staff has found that the proposed development is consistent with the scale and character of the surrounding development. The design results in greater articulation and setback from the frontage street. The upper level addition does not result in substantially larger structures viewed from the beach. And then from the staff report, because the height of the home is below the maximum approved development, it will not result in an out of scale development. So this is an elevation that shows the house. The building envelope is the red or the permitted building envelope is the red cross-hatched area. And as you can see, the height of the house will be 33 feet, which is 2 feet below the allowed maximum. And the frontage side, I want to correct something that Sherilyn said. The decks for the house extend no further than the building string line. The house is actually set back from that, and as the code allows, the building is allowed to go up to that edge of the red crosshatch area, and the decks can go beyond that as long as they don't interfere with private views. In this case, they don't. And the string line methodology was reviewed by your staff, and they agreed that it was the most conservative methodology and have agreed with that. That finding. These are examples of surrounding development. As staff has said, most of these houses present as three stories over basement. You see a couple more examples. Oops. I will conclude. I thought I could do that in 3 minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll come back to staff. Do you have anything to add?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Back to the commission. Commissioner McClure.
Yes, I would like to move that the commission determine that the appeal number A60CN-11-080 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under section 30603 of the Coastal Act and ask for a yes vote.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner McClure, seconded by Commissioner Bochco. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No.
Commissioner Bochco. Commissioner Zimmer.
I had a question. For staff, with respect to, I'm a little confused about the standard of review and how it's been applied here. With respect to the variance, the staff report recites that has concluded that the four levels cannot be found consistent with the city's LCP, and the findings required for issuance of a variance do not appear to be met here. But the approved development nevertheless will appear similar to other structures. And so my question is if the standard is whether the appeal raises a substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which it's been filed, and the grounds are an allegation that it's inconsistent with the LCP, and the variance findings are part of the LCP, I'm not sure how we get from whether we're jumping to the substance in finding that there's no substantial issue because we don't think there's any harm to coastal resources is how I'm reading it. So if you could just explain how we can find it's inconsistent, that the findings for variance are not supported, and yet determine there's no issue.
Yeah, thank you. Commissioner Zimmer, I'll try to answer that. The city approved the project as consistent with the LCP through the variance, and that variance procedure is allowed through the LCP. So the city position is that this project is consistent with the LCP. What I was indicating to you is your staff in our review questioned the support that the city made for the variance. That doesn't mean that the city's decision was not in their mind consistent with the LCP, but that even though we believe this project, as approved by the city, may be inconsistent with the LCP, you are able to look at other factors besides just that point. And those other factors were the size of the structure, the precedent, the adverse effects on coastal resources. And taking all of that into consideration, we think that it's still appropriate that you find no substantial issue on this decision.
Okay. And then if I have a question for the applicant.
I think I'm sorry. Legal counsel
Please,
has something
ahead.
She'd like to add.
Yeah, it's not turning on. Just to address one thing you said, Commissioner Zimmer, you asked how you could find that there's no issue. And in fact, it's not that there's no issue, it's that the staff recommendation is that there's no substantial issue. That is a judgment call, and it's within your discretion. It's the staff recommendation that based on the factors, although there is a point of inconsistency, it is not a substantial issue. However, again, that's a matter for your judgment based on the factors articulated in the staff report.
So the other factors go to the question of whether it's substantial. There is an inconsistency you have found. Okay, thank you. And the other question, if I might, was to the applicant. With regard to the extension of the decks, was there any condition on the city's approval that would prohibit the addition of solid awnings or enclosures of those decks?
Excuse me, Commissioner Zimmer, Susan McCabe on behalf of the applicant. I'm not sure if there was no proposal for awnings in this. I don't know if there was a condition that would prevent that. This is Dina Altman.
Hi, Dina Altman. Thank you for considering my my program, whatever it's called. We are really just going to the end of, to the eastern side of the string line, and it's going to just be an open deck. There's been no discussions about covering it. It's not our intention to do that. I'm sure we would follow the laws just like we've done for the last 2 years in getting this appeal worked out.
Okay, so the deck, the proposed new deck, none of the proposed new decks extend beyond the string line.
That's correct. And
it does not extend beyond the string line, but I might point out that the decks actually are within the building string line, so they could have built building out to the edge of where those decks are.
Thank you. That helps.
Is there any unwillingness to vote? Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none. We unanimously find no substantial issue.
All right, that brings us to the South Coast District, L.A. County items. And Sherilyn reported the district, the deputy director's report under item 9. So that brings us to item 18A, and this is a certification review for the County of Los Angeles LCP Amendment 1-11 for the Marina Del Rey Land Use Plan and Specific Plan. The amendment involved changes to adjust the location of development authorized in existing certified LCP, incorporated changes in response to the periodic review for Marina Del Rey, and for some minor corrections to the plan language. Now, the county has formally agreed to accept the commission's suggested modifications to the LCP amendment, and staff has recommended the commission concur with the executive director's determination that their actions are legally adequate and this amendment can be effectively certified. There is an addendum I'd like to point out for this item that includes a letter of opposition to the certification review, and this person is arguing matters that were subject of controversy in the amendment, but the letter does not raise any significant issue regarding the adequacy of the county's acceptance of the suggested modifications. So that concludes my presentation. Oh, hold on. Council has
yours, but not staff's.
Sorry, there is one matter that the commission should be aware of about this. Yesterday in Los Angeles County Superior Court, a group called Concerned Citizens to Protect the Marina went to court to seek a TRO to prevent the commission from hearing this matter today. The judge ruled that it was premature, and so I just want the commission to be aware that it is able to go forward on this matter. There was a challenge. My understanding is we were subsequently served as a complaint today, although I've not seen it yet. However, there is no bar to the commission acting in this matter.
Okay, thank you. Is there any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
So that brings us to item 19, and these are regular calendar items. Staff is recommending we move to the consent calendar, and those items are item 21B, the Hickerson permit application, and item 22A, the Lakota Properties LLC permit amendment. And staff is not aware of any opposition to these items, and we recommend the commission vote and approve the consent calendar.
Are there any ex partes? Seeing none. Do I have a motion?
Move the consent calendar.
Commissioner Stone moves, and Commissioner Kinsey seconds. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we approve the consent calendar.
It brings us to item 20A, and this is a minor LCP amendment for the City of Long Beach for the deletion of text that refers to sub-area 5 of the LCP or more commonly known as the Pike area of Long Beach. The deletion is deletion of the public tide lands or trust property language in the LCP to reflect an agreement between the State Lands Commission and the city in which these two entities agreed to exchange ownership of certain parcels in the coastal zone. The city gained ownership of the filled tide lands in subarea 5 in exchange for granting the State Lands Commission ownership over city parkland at Bixby Park, Marine Stadium, and Colorado Lagoon in the city. Now, this land exchange was executed pursuant to Public Resources Code 6307 in order to resolve a lawsuit filed in 2011. And the land exchange is meant to settle this legal dispute over which type of uses were allowed legally in subarea 5, specifically whether a cinema, bookstore, and arcade built as part of the Pike Commercial and Entertainment Center in 2003 were uses that were consistent with the land use restrictions for Tidelands Trust property. Now, the California State Lands Commission authorized the Queensway Bay Exchange Agreement, which is known as, at their meeting in June of 2011. And as a result of the land exchange, the state Tidelands designation will no longer apply to this portion of subarea 5 that the city now owns. However, there are no changes to the proposed land use or zoning designations in the certified LCP. The uses allowed in the certified LCP for this area are retail, restaurant, entertainment, display, educational, recreation, and hotel uses. The proposed changes, in our view, are consistent with the certified LCP and the Coastal Act and do not constitute a change in the kinds, location, or intensity of uses in the LCP. There is a letter of opposition to the amendment in your addendum packet arguing that this area should not have been removed from the public trust lands. However, this is not an issue for the commission, and the commission does not have authority over that issue. That authority lies with the State Lands Commission. Again, there are no changes to the land use or zoning designations in this amendment, and the only change is the removal of the reference to this area as public trust lands. So, therefore, the executive directors determined this amendment qualifies as a minor amendment, and staff is recommending concurrence on this amendment.
Thank you. Is there any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Commissioner Blank.
Yes, Madam Chair. Can I ask questions to the staff on this item before we vote?
Actually, I'm sorry. I need to back up. I have speaker slips, which I wasn't aware of. So if you could hold that thought. And who is that? Okay. Tal Finney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nice to see you. I'm just here to answer any questions as well. I'm here for the city of Long Beach.
Your name for the
and,
record?
Sorry, I'm here for the city of Long Beach and for diverse developers, Diversified Realty. And my name is Tal Finney, and I'm here to answer questions along with the staff if commissioners have any questions.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. I just finished 4 days with the Sioux Indians.
next is Lester Denovan.
Lester Donovan, resident of Long Beach. I'm speaking in opposition to this proposed transfer of land from the public trust to the city of Long Beach for a shopping center. This shopping center should never have been built in the first place. The public trust had provided for commerce, navigation, and fisheries. The retail uses in the current LCP are subject to the Tidelands Trust until the Tidelands Trust is eliminated. So retail, yes, bookstores and a few other things, but this list I gave you, which of those will be added? When you're said and done today, will the grocery store fit down there on a former public beach or all these other uses? It's really a bad deal for the citizenry of Long Beach because this so-called swap of land is contradictory. The coastal plan, the local coastal program, designates Bixby Park as a park in perpetuity, ever and ever. Park now, is dedicated according to your own plan. And now we're going to get a trade. We're going to get something we already have and give up a very valuable shoreline property. I'd like to make a couple suggestions, anticipating that this may be approved by the commission. They have torn down one of the buildings down there on the site. And for mitigation, I'd like to see that then converted to public park uses. There's a large immigrant population in the near downtown. Park space is scarce. Set that aside for a park. And benches, trees, and things of a public amenity. Again, I'm really dismayed over the years of the taking of public trust land. The Lands Commission and their staff said that this land down here in Long Beach is worthless for anything except commercial uses, business uses. It's not true. I served on planning committees in Long Beach. We designated uses for that land down there. Now, it's 20 vacant shops as a consequence of a lawsuit, which I was involved in, went all the way to the state Supreme Court. And myself and my compatriots won before the state Supreme Court, and they are saying, in effect, and have, you can't do this. So anyway, there's the 24 vacant shops. You can't develop them unless you take some action.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Staff, do you have anything to add?
No, Madam Chair. Available for questions.
Commissioner Blank.
Yes, Madam Chair, to staff, I'm just confused about our authority on public trust land here. I mean, what we're actually doing is approving, letting the city take public trust land and use it to benefit a developer to build a mall. And so before we just kind of go and do that, I would like staff to kind of educate us, because we don't do this very often, about what public trust means for the commission and whose authority and who should have been saying whether this tideland should not be a development for the benefit of a developer. I thought the word public trust meant public trust, not private trust. So maybe you could just spend a minute and educate us on this issue, if that's okay with the chair.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, through the chair, it is under the state lands purview to decide whether or not a lands are in public trust or not, and it was under their purview as to the this land exchange. The commission does not have authority over those public trust lands, whether they are or not public trust lands. So it was their decision, not ours. Now, public trust uses involve things like, and it's for the public's ability to enjoy tide lands and submerged lands, but it's a much expansive, it's not really clear as to what uses are allowed on public trust lands. These are uses that are primarily visitor serving uses, such as hotels, restaurants, but they do not involve things like, or not one of the uses that are not allowed are like community uses, like a shopping center or something like that. So the dispute here involved whether or not the cinema that was part of this development the commission approved in 2003, or there was an arcade there, or bookstore, or uses that are allowed on public trust lands. And that's what was the heart of that dispute. And at the end of the day, the State Lands Commission entered into a settlement agreement to resolve that issue through this exchange of land in Long Beach. And this is the result of that. All we're doing here is remove it through this amendment. It's just striking public trust lands out of the language in the LCP. The land use designations there remain the same, and those land uses are visitor serving type uses, such as restaurant, retail, entertainment, education, and hotel type uses, so visitor serving uses. So Nothing's really changing here with respect to the land use designations. It's just that designation of public trust.
And just to add one more piece to this, and I realize now that this isn't cited in your staff report, but Public Resource Code Section 6307 mm-hmm. specifically authorizes the State Lands Commission to enter into an exchange like this, and this is and it was amended during this litigation specifically in response mm-hmm. to this litigation. So this is an action the State Lands Commission has already taken mm-hmm. Pursuant to a state law 6307. And what we are doing is conforming our LCP to what's already happened.
And what was the exchange?
I'm sorry?
Do we know what the exchange was?
It was the Bixby Park parcel. That is the exchange that's described in the staff report. The city gained ownership of this filled tideland, sub-area 5, in exchange for granting the State Lands Commission ownership over the city parkland at Bixby Park Marine Stadium in Colorado Lagoon.
Got it. And so what you're saying is, A, we have no authority over the exchange, and that State Lands Commission considers public tideland being transferred to a private mall developer to be an adequate, that is their purview. That's what they've decided to do. And therefore, we have no authority over that. Is that correct?
Well, the
State Lands Commission made
that
decision.
They have the authority over the land exchange.
Right, but we have no authority over that exchange and that judgment. Thank you. That was helpful. And Director Lester, do you remember there was a tidelands issue in Southern California near about a parking lot where we did get involved? Do you remember? And next to a hotel. Remember that, Commissioner Schellenberger?
I vaguely remember. I don't know the facts there.
How did we decide on that one? We had authority to get involved with a tidelands issue when it wasn't near Oceanside. Do you remember?
Well, I'll give these guys a minute to think.
Do you guys
about
remember
that?
That?
I did
okay.
have
this
a,
wasn't a quiz. Do you remember that, Jack? No, Sherilyn, do you?
I think
like
it was the down in the Marina Port Towers. District, Marina Towers.
Yes,
that
right.
Dealt
and,
with
and so, what was our authority there when we got involved with state tidelands issues? Do you remember? Because I remember Director Douglas made a big deal that we had authority.
I think the issue in that case was what uses were allowed on those uh-huh. public tidelands.
Yes.
And there's some latitude there as
also,
to
we
interpretation
do have some latitude.
On what's allowed there, but not with regard to the exchange about land exchange.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think that's an important distinction.
Thank you.
We don't have authority over these land exchanges, but if we think there are tidelands at issue, we can certainly deal with the land use issues. And
uh-huh.
in this case, none of those land use issues are changing. We're simply deleting a reference to the fact that they were public trust lands.
Okay.
But those issues are on the table for us if we think there are trust issues and land use issues related to that.
And I'd like to ask the appellant, did you have a specific point about what question I asked?
Yes, I do. I have this list.
Could you speak into the mic and put your name on the record for us again?
Lester Donovan again. I do have a list of 30 uses, retail uses. Most of them are not permitted now under the tideland grant. So once the tideland restrictions are removed, how many of these 30 uses will suddenly be permitted? It's a major change in the plan. And you do have authority over land uses. Forget the tidelands. You can restrict the uses to commerce, navigation, fisheries, recreation. You can make a list. These are permitted, and these are not, and then define the term. What is retail?
Thank you. And staff, any comments on that from the appellant?
Just again, that in this case, the land use issues aren't changing from our authority standpoint, so that the land use plan has been in effect since 2003, 2002. And this isn't changing any land use designations or existing uses, which are already on the site. It's simply deleting the description of this area being public trust.
Okay. Thank you, staff. And rather than take up any more time in trying to elucidate this issue for me, I'm just going to be voting no only because I'm just not anytime there's a public trust issue in terms of tidelands and other agencies, I just need to feel fully informed before I give away the rights of the people of California to others. And so it's not that I'm disputing this. I just am not sufficiently informed, and I think it would take me with much more data than is in the staff report as a tutorial, not that the staff did an inadequate job. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. And I'll just add that I'm going to be a yes vote because it's to me, it's clear that the State Lands Commission has the purview, has the authority to make an exchange. They have done that. And the land uses that are currently in the LCP were, we found, appropriate on state lands. And the fact that they are, because of the exchange from the State Lands Commission, no longer on state lands, I think I'm quite comfortable that those uses are still appropriate. And so I, in my mind, I'm voting yes because what we're doing is actually making the LCP, by removing the reference to state lands, we're making it consistent with the reality that the State Lands Commission has approved this exchange. So with that, I will ask Ms. Miller to call the roll, please. And the maker, oh, we don't have a motion yet.
I have one question.
Sorry. Yes.
Madam Chair, in reading the staff report, it seems like this, the precise question before us is whether we agree that this is a minor amendment or not. And the description from the regulation is that a minor amendment includes changes in wording which make the use as designated in the zoning ordinances, et cetera, more specific, and which do not change the kind, location, intensity, or density of use and are consistent. So it sounded to me like the public speaker was claiming that through this change that uses which perhaps were not allowed before, types of retail uses, will now be allowed. But what I'm hearing from staff is that that is not the case. Thank you.
That's correct. And this is concurrent, so unless one third or four of you disagree with the ED's determination, it would be deemed approved.
Is that a show of hands? Is that, or do I take a vote?
You could do a show of hands, or if there are more than one commissioner that would like to.
If I could ask all in favor of concurrence, please to raise your hands. And I am seeing all commissioners except one, so concurrence has been granted. Thank you.
All right, so that brings us to item 21A, the McCarthy Singer application. And we have a PowerPoint for this. If you could pull that up, please. So item 21A, and the proposed project here is to demolish an existing single-family dwelling, construct a new 33-foot high, 4,600-square-foot single-family dwelling on Ocean Way in the Pacific Palisades. The project includes an elevator access structure that would extend up to about 38 feet. The proposed project is located inland, on an inland lot, approximately 750 feet from the beach, as you can see from the slide here. And the site is located within an existing residential neighborhood. Now, as you all recall, the commission continued this permit application from the November 2011 commission meeting. And the commission indicated that the proposed project, in their view, was not consistent with the size, scale, and character of the surrounding residential community. And the commission provided us guidance and the applicant to reduce the overall size and scale of the project to comply with the City of Los Angeles baseline hillside ordinance, which limits the size of the residence based on the size and steepness of the parcel. Now, the applicant has submitted revised plans in response to some of the guidance the commission had given, and the project has been modified as follows. They revised the design of the structure from a more modern style to a Spanish colonial style with levels that are articulated or step backed, in contrast to that previous more boxy design. The height of the residence has been reduced by half a foot from 33.5 to 33 feet. The revised plans has reduced the elevation of the roof deck railing by half a foot. And the revised plan eliminates the rooftop stairway access structure and reduces the height of remaining elevator rooftop access structure from 40 feet to 38 feet. And they add an exterior stairway to access the rooftop deck. Now, the most significant change here, in our view, is the change from these to the Spanish colonial design with this articulation on the right. You'll see the old project and on the left, the new project with articulation and balconies that help with that modify that design, much more attractive design. Now, the change to the height of 6 inches are obviously very minimal, and the square footage of the residence has actually been increased by about 14 square feet. Here's some more elevations, show some of that articulation. Footprint has really not changed. And at the last hearing, some of the commissioners had suggested that in the absence of any certified LCP height or design standards, since this is in our area of original jurisdiction, that the staff use the baseline hillside ordinance as a guiding standard for the height and scale in this case. Now, the hillside ordinance was designed in response to an increasing trend of large homes, often referred to as mansionization, on sloping hillside canyon lots in the city of Los Angeles. And as you recall, this project slipped in just before the passage of that ordinance. Now, the baseline hillside ordinance, or BHO, contains requirements regarding setbacks, floor area, height limits, lot coverage, and grading. And the maximum height for a residence under the BHO in this area is limited to 28 feet for a structure with a roof of a slope less than 25%, or a flat roof, or 33 feet for a structure that has a sloped roof greater than 25%. In this case, we have a flat roof, and 28 feet is the standard. The BHO contains references, also restrictions, on the floor area ratio, or FAR. The FAR requirement is either 25% of lot area or an FAR that is calculated based on a somewhat complicated formula that takes into account the slope of the lot and the size of the lot. Now, the revised plan here does not comply with the height restrictions of the BHO for a flat roof residence, which would be 28 feet. In addition, the applicant claims that the proposed residence complies with this FAR requirement of the BHO. However, the applicant has not submitted the slope analysis necessary to determine the FAR, what is the appropriate FAR for this site. In staff's opinion, and as suggested by the commission at the last hearing, requiring the proposed residence to comply with the BHO requirements would result in a project that is more conforming with the height, scale, and character of this surrounding area. Therefore, to ensure the project is in conformance with the City of Los Angeles BHO, the permit has been conditioned to require the applicant submit final plans that have been reviewed and approved by the Los Angeles County Planning Department for compliance with those BHO standards, which will require reduction of height and possibly reduction of square footage based on the FAR. We believe the City of Los Angeles is best equipped to make that call with regard to conformance with the BHO. And as condition, we believe that this project will be consistent with the Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act, and we are recommending approval subject to the three conditions in your staff report. So that concludes my presentation, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes? Commissioner Kinsey.
Yes, on February 6th, I received a phone call from Doug Sussman on this matter, and he presented, he just wanted to concur with the staff's recommendation for a short phone call.
Thank you. Commissioner Mitchell. It's okay. I'll go ahead. I just opened an email last Friday, which was dated actually January 31st, from Doug Sussman, Moy Thompson, and Wes Huff. They were requesting a phone conversation, which I was not able to do. Their email says that they are in full support of the staff recommendation, including the staff requirement that the design comply with the BHO. Commissioner Mitchell.
I'm sorry, it was in the last few days that I had a conversation with Doug Sussman. We reviewed the PowerPoint presentation as well. He sent me a draft of the transcript from the previous commission meeting that I was not in attendance with specific comments on the project.
Thank you. Commissioner Stone.
I have ex parte on file.
Commissioner McClure?
Yes, I had received a request for a meeting that I was unable to do with Huff also, and read the forwarded emails that had come through staff.
Through staff. Commissioner Bochco.
Yes. I had a similar conversation with Doug Sussman on February 6th, in which he reiterated that he was in agreement with the staff report. He felt that in our prior meeting, we had decided that the BHO should be strictly enforced, and he felt that the house was 2 feet taller overall than it should be because the applicant's architect was using the wrong level of where to measure the house from, and he's saying it should be at the lowest average grade, which is 2 feet lower than the garage, and that hadn't been in the staff report that I knew of, but perhaps it was. Then on February 6th, in my office, I had a 45-minute meeting with the applicants. They brought in their new plans for the home they want to build. The plan showed a much different structure than before. It was a Spanish-style step-back frontage, smaller in height and in a mass appearance. They said that the new plans met BHO standards in every way except for the roof deck, which was at 29 and a half feet instead of 28 feet, but that the roof deck was behind the peak of the roof and couldn't be seen from the street. Excuse me, this is a lot. I don't want to read the whole thing. The applicants said they were in constant conversations with Doug Sussman, and he was representing the neighbors, and that they even incorporated his suggestions of how to meet the BHO standard in their information to their architect, and I believe Mr. Sussman actually spoke to their architect. And he had indicated that if they lowered the property by 2 feet or 18 inches, then everything would be in compliance. But the neighbors in front complained about that, and they own the driveway that the two properties share. So they weren't able to accommodate that request. They also said if they were to conform absolutely with the BHO, that they couldn't have three stories, resulting in one story of living space, since the first story must accommodate a garage because the lot is very small. They indicated they didn't have time to go to the city because of our meeting happening this month to get a variance, but the city had indicated that variances have been given on the BHO. And then I've attached the emails that Commissioner McClure mentioned, and I think they were sent to all the commissioners.
Commissioner Zimmer.
I received a request for a meeting, which I was unable to respond to, and I received the emails.
Thank you.
I was forwarded an email from Commissioner Bloom, forwarded it to me, and it was from Doug Sussman and similar as described by Chair Schellenberg.
How do I say your last name?
Yeah. Well, you got all the syllables in.
Okay, good.
Yeah, that's good. Any other ex partes? Seeing none, I will open the public hearing and call Dara McCarthy. Yeah.
And how you doing?
How much time would you like?
10 minutes or so should be fine.
Okay, and then maybe two or three for rebuttal if you'd like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fine.
All right. So thank you for letting me speak here. My name is Derek McCarthy. I'm the owner of the house along with my wife, Lucia Singer, here. This is the current property. This picture was taken shortly after we purchased the property in March 2010. This house was built in 1950, I think. This was the original plan as the staff put forward. There was some concerns. This plan was fully plan checked by the city and got stamped and approved by the city and had a positive staff report, but there were concerns about the plan. Namely, it was too boxy in shape. There was a need to reduce the mass and the bulk of the house. The style was not in character with the neighbourhood. And generally, this was exactly the shape the BHO ordinance was written to avoid in terms of plan. It's not the best graphic, but this is exactly how the house looked, essentially. A big square box, 36 feet high to the top of the parapet wall. An extra 6 feet for an elevator housing for 42 feet overall. Big square box, exactly the thing the BHO didn't want. So we listened to you guys. We hired a brand new architect on the neighbour's request. We designed based on the BHO directives and guidelines and guidance from the staff, an email from John Delarose saying use the BHO as factors when you're doing your design. We went to extra lengths to reduce the mass and the bulk, and we redesigned as a Spanish colonial. And I should add, at all stages, we made the plans available to neighbours. We told Doug Sussman, who was acting as proxy for the neighbours, to deal with Rob Sinclair, the architect. There's no point talking to us, but we were always available to talk. We took every suggestion, and there's a whole email trail from pre-coastal meeting to post-coastal meeting showing that we were willing to negotiate regardless of how the hearing went last November. I'll come back to that later. So we listened. So this is what we came up with. I think the Spanish colonial architecture speaks for itself. The three floors, the bottom floor, the second floor and the third floor, we stepped back in what they call a wedding cake style, a tiered style. This substantially reduces masses and bulk. This was something that was recommended by the BHO. The height, even though it's only reduced half a foot, it's reduced from a flat roof to a pitch roof, which is fully BHO compliant. So we're 33 feet pitch roof or sloped roof, fully BHO compliant. So visually, this is what we've done. We've gone down to 33 feet, which is BHO approved. We've sloped the roof, which is BHO approved, and we've stepped each floor back 3 feet, which was something that the BHO actively recommended to do. Oh, bugger. Sorry. So the net result is that all this mass and bulk has been removed. And like I said, we went to special consideration to doing that, because that seemed to be a big problem for everybody. As regards the architectural style, I know it's difficult to see, but these photographs here are photographs of houses in the area, of style in the area, and we've incorporated all these design elements into the house to make sure that's consistent with the character of the neighbourhood. This is the new versus the old is obviously taller, bulkier, it looks different, more modern, the new speaks for itself. It's stepped back, a hell of a lot less mass, Spanish colonial, pitched roof, everything like that. So the net result is the house is almost 100% compliant, but there is a rub, of course there's a rub. I wouldn't be here if there wasn't. I always wanted a roof deck. I grew up in Ireland where the weather isn't exactly, shall we say, sunny, and I wanted a roof deck in Southern California. We could sit out, you know, catch a few rays, have a beer, read the newspaper, watch the world go by. And I explained this to Doug Sussman numerous times pre the coastal hearing in November. And he gave me his word. He said, you know what, that's an accommodation we can make. If you make the other accommodations, we can make that accommodation. No problem, I understand your concerns. Then when we went to November hearing and we got a continuance, the neighbours kind of got the wind in their sails. And suddenly the tone of the emails changed. It went BHO a bust. It was like the Treaty of Versailles. It was no correspondence entered into. This is what we're going to do. The only difference is we need 29.5 feet for a roof deck instead of 28 feet. So you have the pitch roof here, and we need a flat roof here. That's the only area we're not compliant, and we may not be compliant because I'll get to that in a moment. So if you see here in this, what we've done is we've cut away the rear of the house, and the floor is now 29.5 feet instead of 28 feet. That's so we can fit in a garage along the lines with LA Department of Building and Safety and two other floors. So in mitigation, and I'll show you this, the extra inches do not add to the height overall of the house. It's still 33 feet. They're not visible from the street. They're hidden behind the ridgeline of a BHO-approved roof, so you won't see any difference. And I don't think anybody's going to look at that house and say, you know what? That house looked like it was in character with the neighbourhood. It looked like you reduced mass and bulk, but then you've gone and added these 18 inches, and I don't think you've achieved anything you've said. I don't think any reasonable person would look and think that. Furthermore, the BHO that were supposed to apply verbatim specifically exempts our project from the restriction. This is a paragraph in the city, and it says there, any plans paid prior to the date of ordinance will be vested under the old rules. Now, I know there's been some of the neighbours have alluded to that we slipped these plans in and everything like that. We bought this house in March 2010. We put these plans in April 4, 2011. If we were going to slip it in, we would have kind of done it a little sooner. I mean, we're not idiots. I may be Irish, but I'm not an idiot.
Easy.
Sorry, Commissioner. Anyway, but I mean, we didn't slip these in. The reason we extended escrow was because the guy who was selling the house couldn't get his act together. We to release money. We extended escrow three times. Again, I have documents that show that. And I'd say one other thing. I work in finance. When you pay your taxes, on April 15th. You don't get a bonus from the IRS if you pay them on January 1st. In fact, most major post offices in this country will stay open till midnight on April 15th because they realise April 15th is the date. If the BHO didn't want to exempt our plans, they could have easily said it. So we're not trying to slip it in. And that kind of hurt particularly because it was kind of like an insinuation of our character. And that was not the case at all. So in summation, at the community's request, we've hired a brand new architect. The architect we had has gone into manic depression and probably never get another job in the neighbourhood again. We substantially reduced the mass and the bulk of the house. We redesigned consistent with the neighbourhood, Spanish colonial. We got rid of that modern-day looking thing. We reduced the overall height from 42 feet to 33, which is BHO compliant. We've been at all times willing to compromise, both before and after, and we have email trails to prove that. We've made everything open. And even when the community was adamant, we persevered with the design because we hope cooler heads will prevail. So all we're asking for is 18 inches. It's hidden behind a BHO-compliant ridgeline, and we're vested under the BHO, that the very BHO ordinance that the community wants to apply. And I would also answer two things that were mentioned in the staff report. The 2 feet is actually incorrect. We met yesterday. Yesterday was the earliest meeting we could get with LA Department of Building and Safety. And in the BHO, what they do, the old lowest average grade is gone. What they do is they take the ridge line like this, and you get 33 feet parallel to the ridge line. So we could actually go up, according to the gentleman yesterday in the city, and we were in the city for about 2 hours yesterday. We could actually go up higher on the pitch roof, because when the original house was graded, the natural grade was probably cut away, and we can use that natural grade. And you go on the US Geological Survey site, and you get the topo maps, and you use that grade. So we're actually, that 2 feet is actually below. And then the second thing I would say, the BHO in the ordinance itself says that they can go up 45 feet if they want. So it's not like this is something that's, you know, written in stone. We want to go up 18 inches. You know, I just want to be able to sit down and not bang my head when I get out of my car in the garage, you know. So that's where we are. The question we'd have for you guys is that if you would modify condition one, I think is the words to say, that you'd approve the project with this 18 inches, and then the city would approve it, and then we'd be all hunky-dory. So thank you very much, and any questions, I'm here.
Thank you very much. Lisa Cutting?
You should also have a speaker card for Doug Sussman.
I do not. Oh, I do. I'm sorry.
We're going to reverse the order.
Fine.
Is it okay if we just consolidate?
Of course.
We're coordinated. We'll keep it short.
So you're speaking for both of you?
Santa Monica, so I'm out of breath.
Okay. Take a deep one. Are you speaking for both of you then?
Yes. we both have a piece.
Okay, so you're just going first. Fine.
Is it possible to put this in the computer? I'm sorry, we weren't.
Here, sir.
Thank you. While it's loading up, is it possible we could have eight to 10 minutes? We won't need it probably.
Have just six so
we
between don't have the two of you. It's 3 minutes apiece.
Okay,
so
that's fine. Let me just say quickly that
I need your name for the record.
Sorry, Doug Sussman. I am representing the neighborhood associations who couldn't all fly up today, but Boca Neighborhood Association, the Santa Monica Canyon Civic Association, and the Ad Hoc concerned residents of Santa Monica Canyon, as well as the 40 households who sent letters in support of the staff report with the conditions. So really the focus today is on the, I think, is on the condition. We support the construction, Derek and Lucia's right to build a house, and a house with a deck. I can imagine Derek out there. That is not the issue, whether Derek gets his deck. The question is the height of the deck. The BHO allows a deck, so that's not the issue. The question is, under the Coastal Act, is the house visually compatible with the surrounding area? That's been the thanks. And do I flip it here? Okay, I'll just go like that for each one. Just to quickly go through it, Santa Monica Canyon, you've seen these before, so we'll just run through these quickly. Let me get to where we are today. And I agree with Derek. There was very nice communication with the architect. We're delighted that they hired the architect. But let's look at where we are today. Keep going. The Civic Association's next. You all agreed last time, I think, strongly that the previous one was not visually compatible. The applicants have acknowledged that next and supported using BHO as the guide next or as a guide next. We won't even go through that next. And the BHO has flexibility, as Derek has mentioned, in how it gets designed next. So the existing house is here next. This is the new design as of December. That's what's before you today. It hasn't been submitted to the City of LA yet, so we don't know the we don't know whether it will be approved or not next. The question of whether we think the heights are not correct, there's the 29.5 that Derek mentioned, next. 28 is what's allowable, so under the BHO, next. We do believe that the lowest average grade is 2 feet lower. That would lower the house. If it's not, it's not. But it hasn't gone through the process yet. So exactly. Under the previous submission, it was 2 feet lower. Exactly. Next. So that's what is the – under BHO, it would be lower next by that much. May not seem like much, but when you spread it across 85 feet, that's a significant difference in bulk and impact. Next. The point is that the staff report found that the submission before you – is not visually compatible according to the standards that they developed. Next. And they recommended simply that it be certified by the City of LA to conform with BHO. The issue of the grandfathering is moot. The question is it visually compatible under the Coastal Act? And the discussion by the commissioners was that the BHO provides a very good guideline for visual compatibility. The staff is asking simply that it be certified. The community is 100% behind this condition, behind the support for the application and this condition, that it be certified. And then all these questions about 2 feet or 19.5 feet will be answered by the city, which handles the guidelines, rather than us trying to figure out now which is the right lowest average grade. So to close, next, please. Both organizations have recommended supporting approval of the application with the conditions as written by staff. Next, and I think, Lisa, we have a couple of minutes left if you want to finish. Thanks.
Good morning. Lisa Cutting. And today I'm also representing the organization that Doug mentioned, Members of Concerned Neighbors in Santa Monica Canyon, Santa Monica Canyon Civic Association, and Boca Neighborhood Association. Doug's done a great presentation showing some of the visuals. I just want to recap where we're at today. And I should say that all three organizations support the staff recommendation that is before you today. And I just want to remind you that of kind of where we've been at. The applicants first submitted plans to the Coastal Commission last November in a meeting in Oceanside. You determined at that meeting that the height and mass of the project were not compatible with the community character of Santa Monica Canyon. You then directed the applicants to revise their project plans to conform to the BHO, to work with the community to achieve consensus, and to resubmit revised plans to the Coastal Commission once both of those things had been satisfied. The applicants have resubmitted plans, and those plans still do not conform to the BHO, despite the direction that you gave them in November. Today, staff is recommending that the Commission approve the permit with the condition that the applicant revise the plans to conform to BHO. Once the City of Los Angeles approves the plans as complying with the BHO requirements, then the Coastal Commission can grant final approval. All three organizations that Doug and I are representing today support staff's recommendation to approve the permit with the very important condition that the plans are revised to meet VHO requirements and are approved by the City of Los Angeles prior to submitting again to Coastal Commission for final approval. We continue to believe that the VHO guidelines will ensure appropriate height and structural mass of the project so that it fits with the scale and character of existing buildings of Santa Monica Canyon.
If I could use the last 30 seconds just to reiterate two points. The BHO does not preclude a deck. That's simply not the issue. It's just the height which would be controlled. The second is that the BHO is not a draconian standard. It is actually the standard that every hillside house in Los Angeles now has to meet. This is not some punishment that's been meted out for this project. This is now the citywide standard for hillsides based on many community meetings, a very difficult process to figure out the right heights. These numbers mean something. They're not arbitrary. It's 28 for a reason as opposed to 29 and a half. So we're simply asking that the standard that is now globally applied to hillside houses in the coastal zone be applied in this case.
Thank you. Glenn Ackerson? Did I misread your last name? Oh, I'm on the wrong... Sorry. All right. Mr. McCarthy, would you like 2 minutes for rebuttal?
Sure. Thanks. I have an email here from Doug Sussman dated Tuesday, October 25th, which I sent to staff a couple of nights ago. He says, thanks for meeting with me and Moy last Saturday. This was his wife. There's definite interest in trying to reach an agreement. I think everyone understands the benefit of reaching an agreement, even if that means compromise on our part as well as yours. This was pre the last coastal hearing. Then we come to the last coastal hearing and we see all compromise has gone out the window. Again, I would just say, can you really, a reasonable person, think that that difference in height of 18 inches hidden by a ridgeline, which is BHO approved, does that really change the character of the house? Have we not come massively towards what they asked? And had we come half this distance before the last coastal meeting, they'd have agreed to it. It's just, they kind of got the wind in their sails here, and it feels like it just doesn't feel right. The last thing I would say is that the height that Doug says about 28 feet being taken is 28 feet for a reason, but they also have in the coastal that there is a reason that you can go over 28 feet. You can go to 42 feet, I think it is, 45, I'm not sure. So there is reasons for that too. There's also a reason in the coastal that says our house was exempt. I mean, it's a selective application of the BHO here. If we want BHO, let's make it BHO and save the trip. But I mean, they want the BHO that negates our height, but not the BHO that says you can get a variance for that height. Not the BHO that says, hey, your plans are okay. And there's one thing, when Doug said it was a moot point, what they're going to do is they're going to go to the city and take the changes that we've made here and say, you guys have made more than 5% changes. Now it's not a BHO home. Now it's a new application. Therefore, you lose your vesting. And I think that's pretty scummy behavior myself. And that kind of hurts. So... it's in your hands. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you. We'll come back to staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you can see, there still remains a dispute here, and that's why we just took your lead and think that going back to the city under the BHO would be the best solution here. Whether or not it's 28 feet or 33 feet or the deck's too high would be determined by the city in compliance with the BHO standards. Obviously, there's some latitude in the BHO standards, and rather than us trying to interpret those standards, we think it's appropriate for the city to do that and certify those plans back to us. So that concludes my comments.
Thank you. I will come back to the commission. Commissioner Bochco.
Yes. I'm really sorry that this had to come back under these circumstances. I had really hoped that everyone could reach an agreement with each other, which is always the best way, as both of you have stated. I want to remind the commission that, you know, I lived in this neighborhood. I know the neighborhood very well. I was adamant that the original plan as approved by the city was not in the community character, which is really the only concern of this commission as far as I'm concerned. Chapter 3 applied. There was no LCP. And we determined that that large, bulky house was not in compliance with Chapter 3. In my meeting with the applicants, I did see the new plans. I felt they were absolutely in character of the neighborhood.
I think they came a long, long way to be in compliance with what we asked for. The BHO does not apply to them. They were approved before they even got to us on something that was much worse than this. My feeling in discussing the BHO at all at the last hearing was that it should be a guideline, not that it should be a mandatory standard, because it doesn't apply to them. And I feel like they are now being punished for having gone through a process that we tried to get conformance with the look of the neighborhood. I think they've done it. I think they've done it very well. And I hope that you know, we can see it that way. It is difficult to see the design on our screen. So I won't be supporting the motion with condition one. I would be asking for a modification. I'm not quite clear on all the procedures on that, but that's where I would be.
Just for clarification, the procedures would be that once a motion, the motion in the staff report has been made and seconded, any commissioner who wanted could then amend that motion is the procedure. We always start with the motion made in the staff report first.
Can the maker in the motion?
Yes. Anybody can make an amendment. Okay. Commissioner Blank.
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission approve Coastal Development Permit Number 5-11-125 pursuant to the staff recommendation, along with modifications requested by the applicant.
No, you need to just make the motion as the staff report. I will let you.
Pursuant to the staff recommendation, I'd like to make an amending motion.
Once you have a second.
And you ask for a yes vote.
Yes, I'm asking for a yes vote. Can I have a second? And then can I make my amending motion?
Yes, you may. Commissioner Blank has moved, and Commissioner Mitchell seconds. Commissioner Blank, would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I think the applicant...
May I suggest if you actually want to make an amending motion, this would be the appropriate time to do it.
I would like to make an amending motion, Madam Chair. I would like to amend the staff recommendation to include the applicant's request for his 18 inches and the other items he required or requested in staff recommendation one. Can I have a second?
You have a second by Commissioner Mitchell. I believe what you're asking for is to delete condition one. Is that accurate?
Yes. Let me ask the applicant. Is that what you're requesting? Can you come up and I just want to make sure we...
Yes, if we could build a house with
you. No. Yeah. So right. I asked you a specific question. What would you like modified in the staff report?
Is it condition one?
Okay.
Condition one.
Would you like it deleted or changed? This is going to be your legal document, so now's the time to pay attention.
Whatever is going to be easiest and best. I'm not fully sure.
May I ask staff if they could
delete?
Believe you understand what.
My wife's just told me she wants it deleted, so.
It is smart man.
So we have
smart man.
An amendment to the main motion, which has been moved by Commissioner Blank, seconded by Commissioner Mitchell. So now you're speaking just to the amendment. Would you like to speak to your amending motion?
Just very briefly, Madam Chair, I think this applicant has bent over not only backwards but done somersaults to listen to what the commission staff and commissioners have requested. I think he's shown great willingness to try to do that, and having been in his position in front of the Coastal Commission, I absolutely want to end his appearance in front of the commission as he's trying to do the right thing. Thank you.
Commissioner Mitchell, would you like to speak to the amending motion?
Yes. I mean, I agree with Commissioner Blank. I think I wasn't here for the initial hearing, but the applicant has gone a long ways to appease the neighbors. The BHO does not apply to him, but he went a long ways towards that. I think a couple of inches, that's what variances are for. I think it's a much, much better project and consistent with the neighborhood. I would also... Oh, I had a question. I'll ask a question in a second.
Commissioner McClure.
Yes, I would just say that I'm supporting the motion primarily because I believe that the BHO, as it was written, did not apply to this application. and I appreciate that the applicant worked with the neighborhood to bring in the character of the neighborhood, which I believe he successfully did. But I believe that if we jump over the dates of when the BHO went into effect, we're actually not paying attention to how the ordinance was applied.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Madam Chair, I'll be supporting the motion as well because I believe this redesign does come much closer to meeting the provisions of the Coastal Act that we are here to implement. Thank you.
Commissioner Mitchell.
I'm sorry. No, my question was simply, is there anything that we can do that we can put in this motion so that the applicant doesn't have to go back to the city for another permit and make this a new application altogether?
Well, by deleting condition one, that would he would not have to go back to the city.
Okay. Even though it's over the 5%? Okay. Great.
That's right.
Is there any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote on the amendment, which is to delete condition one? Seeing none, the amendment has been accepted. The main motion is now before us as amended. And the only thing I'd like to add, just to kind of a clarification for me, I am strongly in support of this, and I was also in support of the amendment. But it's not because I believe our job is not to mediate between neighbor battles. And so the fact that this was a neighborhood fight is actually not a concern for me at all. What is a concern is what is the Coastal Act and how this project applicant, whether the project conforms with the Coastal Act. And I believe it does. The other thing, and this is just kind of a semantics thing, but for me it is not because of how far he's come, because I'm never interested in how far people have come in fixing a project, because it often reflects on how bad it was when it started. So for me, this is not a gradual continuum thing. I believe that this project, as it is before us today, is consistent with the Coastal Act, and so I'll be supporting it. Is there any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we unanimously approve the project as amended. Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks very much.
Enjoy the deck.
So that brings us to item 23, which is the Deputy Director's report for the South Central Coast District, which is a listing of the waivers and immaterial amendments and immaterial extensions for the district. And we're not aware of any opposition to the District Director's report. We ask for the Commission's concurrence.
Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
The next item is item 23A, and this is a certification review of the City of Malibu LCP Amendment 1-11. The amendment addressed changes to the LCP's implementation plan to allow for night lighting of the main sports field at the Malibu High School in the institutional zone as a conditionally permitted use, and the City has agreed to formally accept those suggested modifications to the LCP amendment, and staff is recommending the Commission concur with Executive Director's determinations that their actions are legally adequate and this amendment can be certified.
Any unwillingness to unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
Item 24, these are the regular calendar permit items. Staff is recommending you move to the consent calendar, and we have one item. We're recommending you move to consent calendar, and that is 25A, the Sadat LLC permit application. And we have not received any opposition to this item, and we recommend the Commission vote and approve that consent calendar.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes? Seeing none?
Move consent.
It's been moved by Commissioner Kinsey, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we approve the consent calendar.
Madam Chair, that brings us to statewide or a closed session or lunch or one of both of those. I understand the lunch is here in the back. We do have statewide reports, and I have a few minutes under that to do myself. And then there's also some public education grants, and I think the PE staff is coming. I can handle those if you want to proceed either way.
Would you prefer that we wait for that staff to be here?
She's on her way. I know they'd like to do that.
May I suggest then that we break now, go into closed session, and have lunch?
Yes.
Which is to say that we will be back at
1:30. It's a half an hour closed session about. Probably less than that. I think we'll be back by 1:15. And we will do the statewide issues at that time. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Me too.
Back by 1:15?
1:30 is fine, yeah. We'll be back at 1:30 to finish statewide issues. Ms. Melcher?
I do have one announcement for the commissioners. This is a reminder. You all should have received something from our human resource director that your Form 700s are due March 1st. So I'm just reminding you today, and we'll remind you again tomorrow, that those are due March 1st. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We will break now for lunch and a closed session. Be back at 1:30.
It tells you all of you.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to call the Coastal Commission back to order and ask our legal counsel if she would report out on our closed session.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In closed session, the Coastal Commission received litigation information and advice in the matter of California Coastal Commission versus Fiduniac. In the matter of Shea Homes versus California Coastal Commission, the Coastal Commission received litigation information and advice and gave direction. In the matter of Sierra Club versus California Department of Parks and Recreation, the Coastal Commission received litigation information, and the Coastal Commission gave direction in a matter of threatened litigation. Thank you.
Thank you. Approval of the minutes?
Yes, thank you. We do have minutes that need to be approved. Number 26.
Approved. Moved by Commissioner Stone and seconded by Commissioner Mitchell. Any unwillingness for unanimous approval of the minutes? Seeing none, they're approved.
And item 27 is commissioners' reports.
Do any commissioners have reports on business done for the commission? Seeing none. The Conservancy report. The Conservancy did meet on January 19th in Southern California, and we took a field trip on the Biona wetlands as well as the Baldwin Hills. And it was quite stunning to be in the middle of the Biona wetlands area. We had to crawl through a hole in a chain link fence to get onto them, and they sure didn't look like wetlands to me. There were homeless encampments, and a lot of it was being used for dogs off leash, that kind of thing. But it is an incredibly, I wish I could remember how many hundreds of acres it is, but this giant open space in the middle of the Los Angeles area. And then we went to the Baldwin Hills park for lunch and the meeting itself. And it was also, I would urge anybody who hasn't been there to go. I hadn't been there before. Baldwin Hills, you know, has a long history of having oil derricks, and there's still a lot of them that are active, but as they get deactivated, or whatever the word is, it gets slowly turned into park. And from the scenic overlook, which is where the building where the meeting was, this was Thursday afternoon, and it was crowded with so many people using that park, you know, of all colors and ages and backgrounds, mothers with baby strollers and people running the stairs for exercise. And it was just, it was clear, it was a wonderful thing to have that close to such an urban area. Then in the hearing, I had the delightful pleasure of granting money to several very good projects. There were two, I think, that were particularly noteworthy for the commission. One was
6.25 million, I think, for the Biona wetlands. The money would actually go to the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Foundation for engineering studies and the background planning, that kind of thing, for restoration of the Biona wetlands. It was unusual for the Conservancy in that it was very controversial. I didn't think much of it. I mean, it was not that different from our hearings, but the Conservancy is not used to having 20 or so people opposed to their projects. What I found interesting was the parallel with the opposition that we had to the Malibu Lagoon. The main opposition was people who didn't want a bulldozer's major restoration. They wanted it done by hand. They wanted school kids coming in and doing it. And in that case, I think similar for me to Malibu Lagoon, it was just not reasonable. It's hundreds and hundreds of acres down there. And so the Conservancy did end up granting that to the foundation. And then the other thing of interest which has come before us was a $400,000 grant to the Planning and Urban Research Association in San Francisco, and that was to implement the recommendations of an Ocean Beach Master Plan. And this is the plan to move Highway 1 off the beach, away from, and to move, you know, all of those public works things, which of course had been before us, really as a enforcement effort. And the only opposition to that was Mark Massara, and he was opposed to it. He thought that the there'd been enough planning and that the money should actually go toward removing the riprap or whatever. So it was but it was very interesting to hear about this really large planning effort in San Francisco to reroute Highway 1, get it off the beach, restore that area, and that kind of thing. So those were the two, I think, that were issues that had come before us in the different package. So it was an interesting hearing.
Thank you. I would note, too, in this the Central Coast grants, there was a grant to the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County for restoration planning in an area we're going to be in tomorrow on our field trip, which we can probably follow up on. And then two grants related to sea level rise, one to the Sanctuary Foundation in Monterey Bay to address sea level rise, and we've been actively working with the Sanctuary in that effort. So more to come on that, I think.
Yeah. So it was a good meeting, and it's great to see the Conservancy moving so positively in sea level rise, something that we've all been talking about needing to do and needing to include it in our how we look at plans, and so hopefully that will result in some additional tools for doing that. So that was the Conservancy meeting, and then we had Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy report. That's Richard, right? It's not Dana. Okay. Okay. Not that one. Deputy Attorney General's report. Okay. Executive Director's report.
So I have a number of items, but first I'd like Sylvie Lee to do 31A and B, which are two public education grants, for your consideration.
Hello. I'm here to briefly go over two related staff reports, both having to do with whale tail grants from the Commission's public education program. These grants distribute funds from the whale tail license plate, which looks like this, and supports projects that teach California's children and the general public to value and take action to improve the health of the state's marine and coastal environments. We award two cycles of funding each fiscal year, and this is the second cycle. During the first cycle back in September, in addition to approving several grants, you also approved a temporary reserve of $26,000. Agenda item 31A consists of staff recommendations regarding this reserve. The staff is recommending allocating it three ways. The first allocation would put $10,000 toward the pool of funds available for competitive grants, which we will be discussing next. The rest of the reserve would be allocated to two targeted grants. Targeted grants are high-priority projects that are an outgrowth of work that staff is involved in or are specifically linked to Coastal Commission goals and priorities. The first targeted grant of $10,000 would be for the nonprofit Rural California Broadcasting Corporation to engineer two podcasts to include in COSWAT California's podcast series. The segments would cover the history of saving two particular sections of the California coast for public enjoyment and could be listened to as people walk the California Coastal Trail or drive on Highway 1. As at the locations being discussed. The podcast would feature excerpts from an oral history project being done with the commissioner's former executive director, Peter Douglas. Funds would not support the cost of conducting the interviews, which are already done, just editing and posting the content. The second targeted grant would be for $6,000 to hire a fundraising consultant for the community-based restoration and education program. The CBREP is an outgrowth of the Commission's public education program and is administered as part of a project under the nonprofit fiscal sponsor, the Tide Center. The CBREP helps build the capacity of community-based wetland habitat restoration projects throughout coastal California and also runs a hands-on volunteer restoration program at Upper Newport Bay in Orange County. In order to diversify the program's funding sources, especially from individual donors, the staff is recommending a small grant to get some help from a fundraising consultant. And I would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Are there any questions for staff? Motion for approval?
So moved.
No. Commissioner Brennan moves and Commissioner Stone seconds. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Only briefly, it's great to see that public money has been used in such wonderful opportunities for public education to about the coast. Thank you.
Commissioner Stone.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Well, I think staff does a great job on this, and I love our whale tour program. So is there any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we approve the proposal.
Thank you. The next item is 31B. We now have $186,000 to spend, and the staff report details the 14 projects we are recommending for funding. The staff spent quite a bit of time trying to have a good geographic balance in our recommendations. So as a result, the list includes planning for a new educational visitor center in Del Norte County, and it also includes the Ocean Connectors program down in San Diego involving migrating sea turtles, migrating gray whales, migrating birds on the Pacific Flyway, and pen pals in all the locations where those animals migrate. Also in San Diego, Millennial Tech middle school students will be studying some interesting ocean topics, including ocean acidification, pros and cons of marine fisheries, and population densities at tide pools. In between these two ends of California, we have public programming at Crystal Cove State Park, teacher trainings by the Los Angeles Conservation Corps, and the year-long bilingual Merido Academy in Santa Barbara and Ventura counties, where hundreds of students will receive 15 ocean-related lessons and 3 field trips, including a visit to the Channel Islands. In the central part of the state, underserved Monterey County students will learn about marine debris prevention and other ocean literacy topics with Mi Earth and Carmel. Inland, students from Bakersfield will be able to visit Montaño de Oro State Park for 5 days, and Stanislaus County students will get together with San Francisco students to learn about the life cycle of salmon and explore both the inland and ocean ends of the Tuolumne River watershed. In Northern California, the list includes watershed stewardship activities in San Mateo County, bay exploration aboard a hybrid ferry with Aquarium of the Bay, teacher workshops and evaluation of the limpets program, which has students measuring and monitoring the populations of different coastal species, and public docent programs at Sonoma County coastal parks and beaches. Finally, statewide, a whale tail grant will support the Five Gyres Institute in a West Coast tour involving public exhibits, school assemblies, student art contests, beach cleanups, research on the quantities of microplastics found in beach sand, and media outreach, all bringing attention to the problem of plastic pollution in marine ecosystems. These 14 grants, totaling $186,000, were selected from 132 different applications, which totaled over $2.2 million. There were many more great projects we would have loved to fund if we could have. The grants we are able to recommend are made entirely possible by California drivers who purchase whale tail license plates, and I would like to publicly thank them and also encourage the rest of you to buy one for yourself, or else it's a great time to get one for your Valentine. Thank you.
Actually, I would say not to buy one for yourself, but to buy one for every car in your family.
Even better.
Better, yeah. Commissioner Brennan.
I'll move the recommended action.
It's been moved by Commissioner Brennan, seconded by Commissioner Stone. Would you like to speak to your...
Again, only briefly, I think these programs, I love that it's spread throughout the state. Having just come back from Central America, where the turtles, I'm happy to see some of that. Also, the gyre project in terms of the plastics, I mean, we might not see it. We see it in Coastal Cleanup Day, minimal on the California coast, but I'm telling you, parts of this world are dealing with the trash that somehow is getting from all our... into the ocean, and I know I don't need to make a case for it, but I'm glad that it's going on that level with the educational level with children, because hopefully those folks can instruct their parents, so when they issues come to councils to make decisions and other bodies about how to deal with plastic issues, hopefully those children will show up and tell their parents what needs to happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Stone.
In looking at the work that you do to pick the programs, consistently come up with great programs, but I know there are a lot more applications than we can actually fund. But it is good to see that diversity up and down the state and the effectiveness of the programs. So thank you.
But if more people bought more whale tails, we could fund more programs.
That is true.
Okay.
Madam
Public
Chair.
Public service announcement.
I had a question.
Yeah, Commissioner Zimmer.
How do we advertise to the public and to interested organizations the deadlines and criteria for application for these grants? Do we put that on the website?
We use a whole variety of ways. We put it on a website. We do email blasts. We put it in our newsletters. It's pretty well known at this point, but we still always, we do a big outreach effort every fall, snail mail, electronic mail, getting the words out, and we have pretty big databases of educators and nonprofit organizations, and we send announcements to all of them throughout California.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we unanimously and with great pleasure approve these grants.
Thank you, and I have one more announcement I've been asked to make. The Coastal Commission has joined with BCDC, NOAA's Coastal Services Center, and quite a few other agencies in the California King Tides Photo Initiative. A king tide is an extremely high tide event that is most dramatic in winter due to increased winds and waves, and allows us to visualize how flooding from sea level rise will impact beaches and shoreline communities in the future. The initiative is encouraging people to take photos and upload them to the California King Tides Flickr group to document this, and the last winter high tides of the season are happening right now through tomorrow, February 9th. And our executive director tells me you might see some on your field trip tomorrow. Feel free to upload your pictures and share them.
That's right. We thought it was important to highlight this. This is something that we've started recently with other organizations, and could be a vision of what some of our future is going to look like. So I wanted you to be aware of that. Thank you, Sylvie.
Thanks.
I did have a few other items just to report on here. One was just to comment on the meeting planning that we go through every month, and this month's meeting in particular. We've now had a couple meetings that have been two-day meetings, and wanted you to appreciate some of the factors that go into meeting planning. It's no one single variable that determines what kind of meeting you have. We have many things pending, and they ebb and flow, but I think the last couple of months we've seen the results of combining different factors, including that we had a very heavy fall. October, November, and December were very heavy meetings, as you remember, followed quickly by the holidays, and then other factors that I think are contributing right now to some of the reduced volume that you're seeing are the transition in particular in North Central and Central Coast, which is directly related to my transition and some of the fallout of the moving staff and new management positions. So we're just about to get back on top of, I think, that pending load. Another factor, I've talked with Jack and Cheryl and Allison about the other districts, and including the Central and North Central districts with Dan. We have many larger LCP planning items that are in the works, so we're trying to do more upfront work, and I've asked the staff to shift their efforts further up the stream of events if they can, and so there's a lot going on that you aren't seeing right now, but it is going to be coming over the next 6 months for sure. And so next March, we have our March meeting, we have some larger LCP items coming, and in April and May, some larger items again. And we'll talk a little bit tomorrow about a Pebble Beach project that's pending that you'll be seeing very soon. So it's kind of a combination of things that I think have just led to the last couple of months being a little lighter than normal. Today we had one of those near-perfect storms where almost everything got postponed as a matter of right. So it's a little hard to control, and I appreciate your patience with the shortness of today. But we're doing what we can to, you know, modulate and make the risk assessments and plan an agenda that makes sense for you. So.
Great job on the local weather.
Yeah, that's the one thing we can control. A couple other things I wanted to, unless there are questions about how we do the agenda planning.
It's not directly related, but relative to the challenges we've had with funding for staffing and processing these and these extensions, does the commission have an identified, or does the staff have an identified strategy that relates to whether or not we could retain outside consultants to work with us on when we reach backload issues? Do we have any position about that? I know that Jay has mentioned that Caltrans has paid for some folks to come on board. How does that work commission-wide?
So I'm not aware of a strategy per se that's in place for that issue. We have used consultants in the past, and you're right, we do have some contracts now, most notably the Caltrans contract. Caltrans is funding 5.5 PY of our staff in order to facilitate the processing of Caltrans-related work, including LCP and CDPs. So we have entered into agreements from time to time. The consulting contracts that we've entered into typically have been targeted to specific needs at the time, so a scientific assessment contract, or from time to time the commission will actually get in a place where they see the need for an independent contractor to be involved. I wouldn't say we have a comprehensive strategy right now to deal with that. It's one of the things that I am interested in understanding a little bit more about, some of the funding options separate from the general fund option that we have and that we've had. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second, but it is one of the things I'm interested in looking into.
Thank you. I also am interested in looking into it as needed. You know, if we're finding a significant compaction and that has a consequence either for staff, morale, or for applicants, in particular public applicants, being able to move projects through, it would be good to be able to work with you to understand the potential, or you're looking out to be able to see whether there are some areas where we're going to run into a logjam on our timelines and what we might be able to do about that.
And like I said, Caltrans is a good model of that, what we have done. We've also done it with the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy. There's another potential option pending. I don't want to speak about the details right now so as to not overcommit, but there are some ideas out there that are similar.
Very good. Thank you.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but haven't there been some cases where, for very, very large, complicated projects, the project proponent has given us money for the purpose of bringing on somebody who works for the commission and who is paid for, so they provide the money, but the person is actually working for the commission. But to my knowledge, that's been done for very large, complicated projects and not a series of small projects that start, backing up in the pipeline.
Right, and I could understand that.
Yeah.
As I said, I think local coastal program updates and things of this nature, public agencies, to lose a year is a real issue in some instances. And also just for the staff to always be under a blizzard of work, I think, is not really a great work environment. So
I think your comment about, or implication that maybe we need a strategic thinking piece about it is a good one, because one of the challenges with these kinds of contracts is if they're coming and going in ad hoc fashion, you can't really anticipate and deal with the you know, the personnel and civil service issues around getting contracts and what it means for the existing staff and how you actually make it work. So it sometimes can cost you more or get you in places you don't want to be.
Right. There's no such thing as an unmanaged consultant contract, I guarantee you. If there was, it would be terrible. Thank you.
Thank you.
The other thing I wanted to mention is I went to Sacramento last week to just do some introductions of myself and talk about various issues with members of the legislature. And I also had a meeting in the governor's office, and I was, had a exciting and unplanned opportunity to meet with the governor for about 25 minutes. And we had a wide-ranging conversation about a lot of issues that we deal with, ranging from climate change and sea level rise to visitor-serving development and the difficulty of some of the aesthetic kinds of decisions you have to make in sensitive landscape. So, but that was a nice surprise for me, and I think a good opportunity just to introduce myself to his office, as well as the meetings we had with various legislators. I'll be heading up there again next week to do some more of that, and particularly as the budget process gets underway. At the end of this month, I'll be going to Washington, D.C. to meet with other managers from coastal state programs and talk about issues in common with those programs that we may have, particularly around the CZMA program that partially funds us. We get several millions of dollars every year from the federal government to support work we do, like the federal consistency review that we have. And so that may be one of the issues that we talk about, this question that's come up about how consistency operates and may or may not be used by applicants trying to achieve certain things, like the desal issue that came up a few months ago. Another issue that has recently come up, you may have seen some press on, is a bill that was introduced in the House to direct offshore oil drilling on federal lands in Southern California, among other things. And take advantage of existing infrastructure that's in place for that oil development. And also another key piece of that would be that it would strip the Coastal Commission's consistency review authority from evaluating those lease proposals. So we wrote a letter in strong opposition to that, understandably, and also raising some concerns with the leasing. We're going to be tracking that. It came out of the House Natural Resources Committee. It's going to the floor in the House. Its chances in the Senate are, different. So we'll be keeping an eye on that and continuing to express strong concerns about what might be proposed for our federal consistency review authority. I did want to take the chance just to, as background, make clear that we're not opposed to new leasing across the board. The Commission has taken a strong position over the years to new frontier leasing, like OCS leasing north of the Santa Maria River. But at the same time, we've always reviewed them case by case, and that's why our consistency review authority is important. We will look at leasing proposals as they come forward for consistency with our program. And so I just wanted that to be clear, that the direction to do new leasing is not per se a problem, although it does come outside of the normal program. Typically, the Department of Interior has a 5-year leasing plan that lays out its proposal for new leases in any given region. This would not be going through that. And so that's a procedural issue that I think concerns us. But I wanted to put that on your radar. Then on last Thursday, I was on a panel about port and maritime issues, just a short presentation, but was asked to talk about the California Coastal Act and ports. The only thing I wanted to mention there was that we did get some nice comments from the crowd about the Contaminated Sediments Task Force. Some of you may be aware of that. It's something that was set up under a specific state statute in the late 90s, directing us to work with the Water Board and Army Corps and others, EPA, and local stakeholders to figure out what to do with contaminated sediments in the Long Beach and LA port areas. And we got a nice observation from the crowd about how successful that's been in this person's view, and it was a good example of how to do consolidated agency coordination Each agency still retains its authorities and separate review processes, but there's this specific effort which is now persisted beyond the statute that set it up, which we engage in monthly or regular meetings to coordinate on these kinds of issues, and something you should be aware of. And finally, I did give a talk, the keynote address at the UCLA Land Use Law and Planning Conference last Friday, and I thought I'd just show you my slides ever so briefly if you're interested, so that you might have some idea of the kinds of things I'm saying when you're not around, hearing about it. And I'll zip through some of these unless you want me to slow down. But this was about a half an hour plus another 15 minutes of questions at the lunchtime. And as you can see, I picked a small topic. And basically, I talked to initially, the framework of the talk was to frame out what I see to be a very successful program in the past 40 years and a great legacy. So you've seen a lot of these slides about our access successes and how we've supported and resulted in securing access up and down the coast in different forms. You saw much of this in Linda's presentation last month. We've worked on the California Trail, the Coastal Trail, including these great rural trails at Diablo Lands, getting access to Stillwater Cove and Pebble Beach. But for the commission, you wouldn't be able to go out on that cove and fish, for example, or launch your kayak. Public access and resort facilities up and down the coast. Urban waterfront access, connecting individual parcels of waterfront access in places like Cannery Row and Morro Bay. And then I shifted from public access and recreation to talk about resource protection. And there the point was that we have a fine tradition of doing constraints analysis and asking, well, what's appropriate on a particular property based on the resource constraints that you find there, not the other way around, not bringing in a house design and plopping it down where you want it, but looking at the site first. And so I think we have a great tradition and a success of refining constraints analysis, including our own wetlands delineation expertise that you heard about in the fall. That middle slide there is a case we did in Big Sur where we were actually trying to define the limits of maritime chaparral ESHA, looking in part at the influence of the fog layer and where that was in play or not. And, of course, we've done a lot of geotechnical analyses with people like Dr. Johnson helping us refine setback methodologies. We've done ecosystem science, most notably in the Santa Monica Mountains, and looking at that system from an ecosystem perspective. We've taken on cumulative impacts. If you spend some time in Santa Cruz, you may see this revetment. In 95, we identified a loss of 25 acres of beach from projects like this cumulatively that could be attributed to that type of project. And then I talked a little bit about how the program has been successful because constraints do matter, and when you take them seriously, they can have a clear effect. And I totally agree with what Director Douglas used to say, it's the things you can't see, but I also think it's the things you can see in particularly in comparison. So here is a case where you have a pre-Coastal Act and post-Coastal Act subdivision pattern where we specifically work to have a re-subdivision set back and protect more habitat. And this is in Del Monte Dunes, City of Monterey. This is a development over time in Del Monte Forest where the area in the ellipse was specifically protected by ESHA overlay policies as opposed to the areas outside of this, which were not. And you can see the clear effect on the development pattern. Here's a setback, a geological setback of a subdivision in Pismo Beach, post-Coastal Act, pre-Coastal Act development pattern on the left. The effect and the success of the program is clear, I think. And we've done quite a bit with mitigation and restoration. Songs is a great example of that. And you saw this report in December about all of the conservation OTDs we've managed to secure over time, 6,000 acres plus so far and counting in terms of the protected lands through your condition compliance. And then I also spent a moment talking about how we've looked carefully at impacts and how to mitigate more effectively. And this was the Ocean Harbor case where you imposed a $5.3 million in lieu fee for recreational value impacts due to a seawall. Then I shifted finally to what I, you know, we can call smart growth, and the point I made here was that I think the Coastal Commission is an original example of how to do smart growth, and that we have a specific policy, Section 30250, that says put new development in existing developed areas and maintain stable urban-rural boundaries. And this was the so I said we've been there doing that, and you can see it in some of the actual boundaries that we've maintained over 40 years. These are 1972 and then today contrasts. This is one you'll drive by this afternoon, probably.
Here's the town of Davenport.
Gizmo Beach.
Didn't
see it. So the other thing you'll see in those photos is we've facilitated or directed infill development, and that is one of the definitions of smart growth. So the Coastal Act has provided a strong framework to do that. This is a stop on our tour tomorrow, the Watsonville High School stop, and we'll talk about that in more detail. But the commission went to great lengths to, while approving that high school, also stabilize the urban-rural boundary through very clear legal restrictions on the parcel and prohibiting extension of urban services out to other urban rural lands. And then this is something that you may hear more about later in the year, the tremendous success we've had through lot retirement programs, including in the Santa Monica Mountains, where we've retired more than 1,100 lots, I think, in our history, or something on the order of that. And then in big picture, the point was, you know, who can argue with the fact that we've protected these great sections of coast, and I think there's no question that the Coastal Commission has played a large role in that protection by providing the land use planning space and framework to do that protection, and for conservancies in particular to step into that space and then finish the work of protecting the land. So then I shifted from, okay, we've been a success, and started talking about some of the reasons for that, the success of our LCP program and a strong local government, state local government partnership, the fact that most CDPs now are issued by local governments, not the Coastal Commission. The fact that, and you saw this in June when I presented an overview of the LCP program, you hear a lot about the rigor and the severity of our program, but most of what we do is approve things with conditions, and very few local CDPs ever actually end up in appeals that then are denied for some fundamental inconsistency. And moving through this, Big Sur is a good example of that, where we've protected the critical view shed, but we've, and more on that tomorrow, so I won't talk about that. So then I shifted to where are we headed, and I said, hopefully not backwards or down. And what are some of the things that are out there in the future that I think are going to affect where we end up? California population, people are the driver of a lot of the issues we have to deal with, and the management issues, and of course it's not going down, it's going up. We're going to continue to see challenges we've always seen. We've seen changes in demographics up and down the coast, so that there's more money invested in the coast everywhere, and the coast is more valuable. That heightens the level of conflict that you have to deal with. We know that the beach environment is extremely important both to our psyche and to our economic values. And then I looked at a couple of the public opinion polls in the last decade. PPIC has done a number of surveys showing how fundamental the coastal program is to Californians, including one of my favorite questions in 2006. Overall, what do you think of the California Coastal Commission when it comes to controls on development? Are they too strict, about right, or not strict enough? 48% of likely voters said not strict enough. And then 27 or 25 said about right. Some thought 10% too strict, 17% didn't know. So Sylvie has a little more education to do out there. But so there's a lot of people, but there's also a lot of public support for what you do statewide. And then I turned back to the fact that LCP work is now a really fundamental part of the core work that your staff is doing and that you see. And that means that LCP updates are even that much more important. The longer these LCPs are certified, the more out of date they get, the more issues we need to deal with, the more conflict we have if they're not updated comprehensively. And we have targeted LCP amendments, which are really project-driven cases for the most part. And we have change over time, so LCPs no longer reflect the reality of resources. We've learned a lot about species. These are all listed since LCPs were certified in many places. And then you saw this slide in June, too, the challenges of communicating about LCP planning with ourselves and local government and the public. And then our capacity for governance, and this is something that was highlighted at an early panel of the day from representatives of the Brown administration. Just everybody's suffering the same inabilities with lack of a budget. The bar chart on the left shows you the staffing levels from our peak in the early 1980s when we were writing LCPs to today, and about over a one-third reduction in the number of people we have to do the work. The graph on the right just reflects that in real dollars, our budget has been flat or declining since that peak. So we, even though the actual numbers have gone up in general fund, and of course they're tiny overall, you know that, we're budget, what people call budget dust in the big picture, it's been flat. And then this is a trend that we need to pay attention to, the right future of sea level rise and what it's going to mean for our coastal communities. No matter what we do with greenhouse gas emissions, the sea level is going to be rising and we need to adapt. We have an adaptation plan. It asks for us to update our LCPs to address climate change. And we know that, the OPC has come out with estimates and it looks like we have a long time to react, but this is what happened in Pacifica last winter. And so we know that change can happen quickly and unexpectedly, and we need to begin planning for that long-term future of sea level rise. And ultimately, I think one of our big challenges is going to be this coastal squeeze, and we'll probably see a little bit of this tomorrow on the field trip at one of our stops. But when you have hardened urban shorelines and rising sea levels, the beach and the public area in between is going to get squeezed. And so how are we going to deal with that challenge of providing public access and recreation while also responding to hazards and real areas of significant private and public investment? And how do we do that? Do we have a vision of the future that involves a lot of spider homes? You know, that's one possible outcome. That one on the bottom is at Stinson Beach in Marin. Or what's going to happen to all these dedications we've secured over the year on the beach? Are they going to be flooded? Are we going to plan for the retreat of major infrastructure like Highway 1 in rural areas where we can do that? And we have started that work with Caltrans. These are examples where we're actively working with Caltrans to plan over a decade, typically, to move the highway inland as opposed to hardening the shoreline. And then I tried to end with some hope by noting some of our success stories. We can be successful if we commit to it. Stillwell Hall at Fort Ord. Years of protection of the officers' club there, it was determined they could no longer save this structure. So when the Army proposed to demolish it, we asked them to also take their riprap with them. And that's what we got. And you'll note there that the beach came back. When the riprap was there, there was no beach in front of it. And now there is. It's recovering. And the city of Monterey is another favorite example of mine where they made a long-term commitment to do something called the Window on the Bay. This is 1972, which shows you a development pattern that they committed to retiring and buying out. And over time, they did that and made it public space. Of course, I don't think they anticipated that they might need that space for sea level rise, but they did make a commitment to that, and I think they did it without eminent domain. So you can achieve these things. And that's where I ended with a broad call for us to continue keeping our eye on the prize but working collaboratively and recognizing these trends and getting funding for LCP planning. So I thought you might be interested in that. Sorry for taking so long. And
terrific. Questions?
Anybody? That's all I had to report on.
Actually, Commissioner Mitchell had a question.
I just wanted to say
Bravo. I mean, I think presentations like this certainly help, and it's something that Blank has been harping on, and I know as a former... No, he's been harping about the commission not doing enough positive PR, and I think, you know, as a legislative staffer in the building for a long, long time, saw sort of the perception of the Coastal Commission versus the reality of the Coastal Commission, because we didn't have someone out there, you know, making these presentations, showing people what we've actually protected or what's not there because of the Coastal Commission. And I think the presentation was great. You did a great, great job, and I'm very impressed, and I think it's lovely to have you as our new executive director. You're doing such a wonderful job. Thanks.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Yeah, I share the appreciation, and, you know, since it was a flyover for us, there probably were some other things that you could have talked about. One that I'm particularly interested in is affordability of the coast. You know, it's almost an oxymoron given the circumstances. But what we need to do is figure out how we can help existing communities, whether they be agricultural communities or fishing villages or even recreational communities, where there is a core community, to be able to continue to function there. And I know that you know, we do work on it, we are aware of it, but I am just going to highlight it because in my county, it's really important. Most of our coastal communities were historically where the less economically advantaged were living. And as the price of land and homes and rebuilds has taken that out, we're having to make accommodation, and we're bumping up against issues. I mean, in some areas in Marin County, we're finding that there are properties that were zoned for resort, commercial, recreational, where people are wishing to convert that into affordable housing. And so it challenges our question of access to the coast. So we're having to look at that. But I think that the commission and the staff should be prepared to look at that as a way of keeping access for all Californians as a part of it. And then the second thing is the demographic projections that include a major movement in our state towards people of color and what we can do to be educating and giving them more opportunity to get to the coast. I think that's going to be very important as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Well, thank you, Charles. I think that was great. And I appreciate it. And I actually appreciate your sharing with the commission kind of what it is you're saying out there. And I thought it was great. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And let me know if you don't agree with anything I'm saying.
Off record. Once we're done. Right?
I would note that I agree that affordable housing is, and affordability is one of those issues that's challenged us over the years. And I gave a smart growth presentation a few years back where I had a slide in there about costs and things. And that's one of the areas where I think we haven't done the job we could and should, and in part because it was taken away from the Coastal Commission. The original Coastal Act had a requirement to maintain affordable housing in the coastal zone. And the act was amended in 81, I think in part because you were actually trying to do that, and conditioning projects to be affordable and stay affordable. Now we no longer have a specific mandate. We do have a provision in Chapter 7 or 6 to do what we can to encourage it, but there's no requirement. I think we need to think about how to leverage our direction to consolidate and concentrate existing development in urban areas and facilitate infill as a way to do that, perhaps. It's hard.
Thank you. I'm glad you're
interested. Okay, great. Is that it for the executive director's report? So I believe we're done for the day.
Madam Chair?
Excuse me, Commissioner Zimmer.
In the staff reports, we had a legislative report also. Oh, yeah. Was that going to be discussed today?
Yes, sorry about that. There is a legislative report. There's nothing new being presented or recommended at this time, and I can answer questions if you have them about the report.
I did have one. Just in terms of process, when we consider legislation that might affect the commission's operations or the policy, do we have an option of opposing supporting or supporting if amended in a certain way, that we could come up with suggestions for how we think a bill could be amended to make it workable for us.
Yes, and that would typically happen through a discussion in public session about a proposal and getting the commission's input on that. The bill, the first bill listed, for example, the commission did take a position of oppose last year. But that was something that we had recommended and the commission decided to do.
Okay. Thanks.
And the process in terms of timing is that we often have this ledge report. It's not noticed as an action item. So if, which has happened in the past, if somebody sees a bill that they actually think potentially they would like us to consider taking action, we can ask staff to put it on the next item, the next meeting as an action item, potential action item.
Oh, and Vanessa's reminding me that we do agendize it as a possible action. So if you see things in there, even though we're not recommending an action, if you think there ought to be an action, you could certainly bring that up.
And the best way to do it is, if you see it in advance, is to alert staff so there can be an analysis before it, because there is generally quite a resistance to commission taking a position on a bill on the fly without actually having a staff analysis.
And then I can have Sarah here, too, so I might somebody who
so
might actually
duck.
Know something.
Yeah. Anything else? All right. Well, you all, thank you very much. Take the rest of the day off, and I'll see you at 9 in the morning. Thank you.